Welcome to Crux Stationalis, the Roman Station Church Network, podcast edition. This is Jacob Stein of Crux Stationalis. Crux Stationalis is an apostolate in Rome. It's an apostolate which shares the Catholic faith through the eyes of Rome, through the beauty of Rome. Some of you are going to be new to the apostolate. Some of you have been following me along for years. But the advantage of this apostolate, the advantage of this podcast is I'm able to share with you what I've learned from the Romans, from being a Catholic in Rome and soaking in what really just pumps through the hearts of Romans. It's in their very blood. And that is something which is universal. It's very particular to the Romans themselves. But as Roman Catholics, as members of the universal church, we're able to tap into that in a way that is universal and shared by us all. So that's what I bring with you at Crux Stationalis. I'm excited today because this is the first ever recorded podcast by myself. It's been a long time coming. It's here by popular demand. By that I mean a few friends over the years have said, Jacob, you should have a podcast as well. It's been inspired by many others who have podcasts, and I'm excited to bring Crux Stationalis to another format, to a format which is going to be more discussion, more in-depth material for you, and sometimes just a bit more colloquial. I'll be able to be telling the stories of my past years, of my time in the seminary, of just my Catholic life growing up, and the inspiration, really, which exists, which is the foundation of Crux Stationalis. And I'm very happy to be collaborating with The Last Lions. The Last Lions is a community of writers, podcasters, and journalists in search of the good and the beautiful. Those of you who have been following me on Instagram, on Facebook, on X, on YouTube, know that I've been exploring simply that, the good and the beautiful. And here with this podcast, even more so, with Last Lions, we are dedicated to telling the stories of heroic individuals, past and present. So I'm going to be bringing you the stories of the martyrs of Rome, the martyrs of the Roman station churches, which is essentially the inspiration of my apostolate. It's the inspiration of early Roman Christianity. It's what inspired this centuries-old tradition of the Roman station churches of Crux Stationalis. Now, we're going to need a bit of introduction. So today, I'm going to give you the who. Who is Crux Stationalis? And that's unfortunately going to focus upon me a bit, just so that you know who your podcast host is. And then in the next podcast, we'll do the what. What is Crux Stationalis? I'll dive into the history of the traditions. What is this weird Latin word that you're saying, Crux Stationalis? And then we'll get more into the when of Crux Stationalis, just what is this tradition? How is it lived out in the past? How is it lived out today? And so I'm really excited that I was given the push by the Last Lions, by my friends, and here we are. So, as I said, I'm Jacob Stein. You can find me at Crux Stationalis, which is across the board on the social media platforms. I think I even have a TikTok. But my social media apostolate officially began in 2021, and it's brought about it's flourished in a way because it's unique. I'm the sole English-speaking content creator who is focusing day in and day out on this tradition. There's others, of course. There's other pages and other content creators who take part in the traditions in Rome, but Crux Stationalis has the benefit of being able to focus solely on this one reality. And so I get to bring you the beauty of liturgy, the beauty of tradition, the beauty of Roman life, Romanitas. And I've had the benefit for many years to learn from that myself. And so what motivated the social media apostolate was I didn't want to just keep it to myself. I wanted to share it with you. And we're creeping up to 130,000 followers on Instagram. There's about 20,000 on Facebook. There's somewhere around 5,000 on YouTube. Twitter, maybe there's 180. Twitter is quite new to me. X is quite new to me. TikTok, maybe there's 2,000 or so. I sometimes forget to publish on TikTok. But all of my apostolate began from a blog. I began writing in 2015 or so on Passionist spirituality and on the liturgy. I'm very inspired by the Passionist saints, and with all of the questions that are going on in the church, when it comes to the liturgy, to morality, to priestly formation, to the integrity of the faithful, I know that I'm a lay person myself. I know the difficulties that face us in our daily life. And also, as a lay person, I know what it means to have to work hard in order to pay my rent, to put food on my table, and hopefully have a generosity in charity towards others as well. So I'm coming at you from this experience, and so this first episode, I want to just ex let you know who I am. As I said, Crux Stationalis began in 2021. I tried to begin in 2020, but then the world shut down. And so I remember my last video. I was standing on the beach on the seaside in the town that I now live in, and I was explaining Saint Augustine, because the church for that day, the church that was visited that day by the Roman Station Church Pilgrim Itinerary, was the Church of St. Augustine, where St. Monica's buried, where there's a statue of Our Lady of childbirth, to which many women are devoted to, and many miracles have been attributed to her in safe childbirth and that sort. And so I was there, and I was standing on the beach, and I thought, let's tell the story of St. Augustine and the Trinity. And that was about the end of that apostolate for 2020. And I took it back up in 2021. I was able to really focus. There wasn't much going on in daily life in Rome. We had a 6 p.m. time where everything was closed. We had a 10 p.m. curfew where we had to be in our homes. We had all these weird rules. But I was able to go to the daily mass and to visit these tombs of martyrs. And it was kind of the beginning of a long journey over the last 3 years. And I've been able to show it and share it with you across social media means. But first, what brought me to Rome? I grew up Catholic. I was a cradle Catholic. I was baptized as a baby, and I grew up going to mass. And I had a priest who, when I was about 10, 11, 12 years old, who taught me the catechism, taught me religious education, CCD, and it opened my eyes. It was the first time I had a priest in my life who I knew was interested in my salvation, as weird as that sounds, who simply wanted to tell me the story of salvation history and to captivate hearts with this love story of God with his people. And everything came. That was the nocciolo, the little nut of the beginning of what attracts me to being Catholic, to living an integrated life as a Catholic. And I'm very grateful for this priest. And I'm grateful for the sort of blossoming that has taken place over the years of those seeds which were planted. And then I was very involved in high school. I was very involved in the youth group and mission trips and things like that. And just in my other hobbies, I was a swimmer growing up, so I learned a lot of discipline in that regard. I did theater eventually before going off to college, so I was able to have this way of expressing myself, which I have memories going back to that. I have motivated memories which enter in when I'm going live on Instagram or when I have to come onto YouTube and sort of perform as I'm walking down the streets of Rome, trying not to get hit by a car. So the social media has allowed me to tap into these gifts and these blessings which have been placed in my life, and not sort of let me close in upon myself, upon the great blessing I have to live in Rome. And actually, I don't live in Rome. I live outside of Rome by the seaside. It takes me a little train ride commute to get to Rome, and I come into the city and I'm overlooking St. Peter's Basilica as I'm coming into the city, which is quite a joy every day. Then, as I was going through high school, even before, I guess, in those years of formation and seeing the example of that priest that I spoke about who taught me the catechism, taught me salvation history, I saw a man who was laying down his life for others in love. And that was the beginning of an inspiration to discern a priestly vocation. And so, as the years of high school went along, I began to go to daily mass, which is one of the reasons why I quit swimming and did theater, so I had more time to do these spiritual things like daily mass and holy hours. And I was eager to, I'm an eager person at times. Some might say impulsive at other times. And I was eager to be done with high school, and I was eager to enter seminary. And so, with my last year of high school, I began the process already to apply for seminary. And it took a while, as things do in the life of the church and just in the wisdom of patience with these matters. It took a while. I received my letter of acceptance to the seminary on Good Friday that year. This was in 2009. Prior to that acceptance of going to seminary, of being accepted in the seminary, I went on a pilgrimage to Rome. I was invited by the vocations director for my diocese to go on pilgrimage. A spot opened up, and I went on pilgrimage to Italy with college students that were involved in Focus. And this vocations director, who was also the chaplain of Focus at the time in the university in my city. And that was mind-opening, shattering, sort of breaking into an experience of culture that I had never had. And we arrived, it was during Lent, and we immediately got on a bus and went to Assisi. And St. Francis of Assisi is my patron saint that I chose in my confirmation. And then we went to Orvieto on the way back to Rome. And Orvieto, if you've been following Crux Stationalis, is one of my favorite places to go. It's sort of my retreat away from Rome, especially in the years when I was living in the center of Rome. I would run off to Orvieto on a Saturday to go pray, and Orvieto is where there is the Eucharistic miracle, which occurred in Bolsena in the 13th century, which brought about the Feast of Corpus Christi that we all celebrate now universally in the church. Then on the way to Rome, This was a Sunday evening. We arrived to Rome. We're staying in Trastevere. I'm staying in a place that eventually I'll move 2 blocks away from when I moved to Rome in 2015. And on the Monday morning of this week in Lent, we went to the 7 a.m. morning mass in English at the Roman Station Church of the Basilica of Saint Clement, San Clemente, which is over by the Colosseum. We were running a bit late, we had to wake up early, we were walking from Trastevere all the way over to the Colosseum, which isn't a short walk. And we got there and I had no idea at that point what a Roman Station Church was, but I just recalled in recent months that the first mass I ever went to in Rome, the first church I ever stepped into in Rome was a Roman Station Church. So to come full circle and to be running this social media apostolate, this Catholic social media apostolate, which focuses on the Roman Station Churches, this ancient pilgrim itinerary. I'll get more into this in the next episode to explain just what this is. But for myself, to have that first introduction to Rome with this ancient tradition has formed me. And that was my first day in Rome, my first morning in Rome. And then it was just a jam-packed pilgrimage in Rome. And coming from, the Midwest, I just never thought. I was like, okay, I went to Rome, really excited to come on this pilgrimage. And then I thought the rest of my life was going to be in Midwest America, Middle America. But instead, things went differently. And I then entered seminary the next year, and I was a diocesan seminarian for 3 years. And I began to question this active priestly vocation. Do I have a more contemplative vocation? I was very, becoming influenced by Carmelite saints, and so I thought maybe I'll look into that. And then, as a diocesan seminarian, I had the ability to study abroad for a semester in Rome. This was in my 3rd year of seminary. It was a great program, kind of centered on art and architecture. And so there was an influx that sort of carries through even today because of that program. I met my friends, who I'm still friends with. This was in 2011 that I did that semester. I met these friends, and they're still my friends today. And professors and things like that. The same university is the same university I'm studying at, which is the Angelicum, the Pontifical University of St. Thomas Aquinas in Rome. And that pilgrimage and then my semester abroad when I was studying in Rome became sort of the first molds of my experience in Rome. Where as I said, I met my friends, I became connected to the parish of Trinità dei Pellegrini, which we'll definitely be able to speak about in future episodes. And then during that semester, I continued to sort of have a purification of these questions and desires for what was a more contemplative way of life, which would have been a Carmelite vocation. And instead, what I knew growing up was active priesthood, active priests in the parishes and things like that. And so I said, okay, I'm very attracted to the ancient liturgy of the church, this history. And what I'll do is I'll stay discerning an active vocation, but go somewhere where I can explore this devotion that was growing in my heart for this traditional liturgy of the church. And this will develop as you'll see as we discuss things, and you'll kind of can hear in my tone of voice and my descriptions of things what has formed me throughout the years. And so I went to the seminary for what was an Ecclesia Dei community at the time, which were communities founded after the schism of the Society of St. Pius X, men who priests who wanted to remain faithful to the Holy Father. And so these communities ended up growing. And so I did a year of a spirituality year in one of these seminaries, And that was a very formative year, especially in regards to the spiritual life and the integration of my spiritual life with the liturgy. There was a complement between the liturgy and my spiritual life that I, of course, understood theoretically, always via the catechism, via Catholic life, via understanding the theology of the Holy Mass. But on a day-to-day basis, I felt like I could live it more by attending the traditional liturgy. And so I continued after I left the seminary. I worked in Nebraska for a little bit. I was working as an accountant and just sort of a factotum for this very good Catholic boss in Nebraska. And I continued to have an itch of moving forward in life. I had no degree because I left the diocesan seminary before obtaining a degree. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to make a pilgrimage to Rome. I think I did that in 2014, around just after Christmas. And I was there for the Feast of the Epiphany. And it sort of reignited this connection that I had to Rome, especially with Trinità dei Pellegrini. They were needing a sacristan, and Cardinal Burke was there on the Feast of the Epiphany to celebrate that mass, a pontifical mass at Trinità. And I just had the advice and the ability, and a room became available, a job was available as sacristan, and I returned to the Angelicum for my studies to finish my philosophy. And then I said, oh, I might as well stay for my theology. And here we are, I'm still studying. I'm obtaining a license right now in dogmatic theology, always at the Angelicum. And when I came back to Rome, I had forgotten what the, this was in 2015, I came back to Rome. I had forgotten what the Roman Station churches were. I didn't realize that I went to a Roman Station church before, that I went to a morning liturgy, which the morning liturgies, we'll get into that as well, are organized by the North American College, priests and seminarians, and the evening liturgies are organized by the Diocese of Rome and the Pontifical Academy of the Cult of Roman Martyrs, which I hope to join shortly. And I was reintroduced to the Roman Station churches when I moved to Rome in 2015. I have a friend who is called the Pellegrina Romana, the Roman pilgrim. She is one of the first ones who put her daily Lenten devotion online, especially through the blog New Liturgical Movement. Every year she would be going, since 2014, she would be going to the Roman Station churches and taking pictures and documenting for herself her journey as a pilgrim, as a Roman pilgrim. And people fell in love with this. And Jacob, being who he is, decided years down the road that he was going to, take the leap from that devotion that she has and the devotion which she shared with me. I started going with her every so often during 2016 Lent, and then as the years went along, I'd start going more and more and more. And I've already said, then I tried to do something more with social media in 2020, building upon the experience I had with the blog post. And just one more thing about that and the liturgy. I fell in love with the Passionist saints when I was in that traditional seminary, and specifically Saint Gabriel of Our Lady of Sorrows. And then he led me to Saint Gemma, and then they both led me to the founder of the Passionist, Saint Paul of the Cross. And it's not so much that I have particular devotions to the peculiarities of their life, but I have a devotion to just the center of their life, which is really expressed by Saint Gemma, who it's said of her that her love for the Eucharist and her love for, well, her love for Jesus in the Eucharist and her love for Jesus on the cross were one and the same. And so that has been at the center of my devotion to the Mass, not just for myself, but my devotion that I started writing on my blog about. I wanted people to return to this understanding of what the sacrifice of the Mass is. And really, with that charism of seeing so many in the world suffering, so many in the world having problems in life, but they have no idea what to do with it. And the only answer with that suffering, the only answer to these problems in life, comes through the sacrifice of the cross. And so the way that we experience that in the most profound way in our daily life is through the Holy Mass, the sacrifice of Christ on Calvary, represented to us in the sacrifice of the Holy Mass. And so that's the devotion which inspired my original jump onto the internet with my blog, of which was PassioXP.com, for key row for Christ's name in Greek. And now it's RomanStationChurch.com. Both of those get you to my blog. And as I said, I jumped onto Instagram in 2020. That was a flop. I jumped onto Instagram in 2021, and I almost gave it up. After Lent, maybe I had 1,500 very faithful followers who were coming with me every day to the Roman Station churches, and I said, that was a great attempt. I'm happy with that season of Lent. It was a lot of work. And June came around, and I said, well, I don't really know what to do with this apostolate. It's a lot of work. I need to find other work. And so I deleted my account for a month. And then I came back in July for a great devotion known as Our Lady's Lent. It was a Umbrian tradition that Saint Gabriel of Our Lady of Sorrows practiced following the example of Saint Francis of Assisi, where from July 1st, one fasts in a particular way in preparation for the Feast of the Assumption on August 15th. And I took that back up, and the page started growing on Instagram. And then the next year, I started making YouTube videos, which were a sort of quality. And then finally, with 2023, I was able to increase the quality of my videos, and then even more so in 2024. And so the Instagram has developed onto YouTube as well, where I'm able to take the viewers and followers with me to each of these more ancient Roman station churches. And what we're going to do with this podcast is we're going to go even more profoundly into why these churches stand where they stand. And that would be because they stand upon the tombs of martyrs. And we're going to explore the heroic witness of the early Christian martyrs. But why? Why is that important to us? Well, we see every day. I'm sure a lot of you consume news articles. You see words that come out of clerics in the church, hierarchs in the church, and you get worried and you get overwhelmed, and you might encounter family and friends who reject church teachings, who just don't, maybe they've never experienced that love story that I mentioned before, this story of salvation history. Maybe they have, and maybe they just reject it. But if you saw the little program, the announcement of my blog, sorry, of this podcast, the announcement of this podcast, where I said, new podcast, The Martyrs of the Roman Station Church. None of it matters if you're not in the state of grace. I've been encountering this a lot in my time in Rome. where I encounter people who, especially who might very much appreciate the traditional liturgy that we have at Trinità de' Pellegrini. They might be coming as visitors, they might be living in the city, things like that. And especially with my interactions that I have online, you witness a lot of people who are just overwhelmed and confused with the lies that the world is telling us. And I've been reflecting upon this recently, and I can't say it any other way but to be summed up by St. Paul, knowing that everything is grace, and that Saint the little flower also echoed that as well, but also knowing that the reason why I should be w able and willing to accept the weaknesses that I have is because through those, Christ's power is made even more evident. And there's a grace that not everyone has, and this grace is to a particular grace that people have received. To simply say yes to Christ through his church, to say, I trust in you, I believe you. And Christ says, blessed are those who haven't seen and believe. But the church also is so willing to give us all the answers, obviously found, as I said, in the sacrifice of Christ. But if you are sitting there listening to this and you disagree with things of the church, or you disagree with the morality of the church, the church teachings, and when it comes to life, when it comes to sexuality, when it comes to whether you're a kleptomaniac or whatever your issues are in your life, if you're sitting there and you say, no, I know better than the church, you need to go to the cross and say, Christ, wow, who am I to counter you? Because in the end, you're nothing. So you need to say, help my unbelief. And I don't know if it's not naivete, it's not ignorance, it's not, what's the word, puritanical to say, wow, Jesus, I accept every single word that comes forth from your mouth. Because who As Peter said, to whom else shall we go? And so we're going to explore the martyrs in a way that we would explore scripture. We can look at their life, and I think this is where a lot of people just stop. They look at their lives and they say, okay, that's a nice example to follow. Maybe, hopefully. If ever it would come to me, maybe I would give my life for Christ. And I remember when I was young, I would always be very impressed by this concept of white martyrdom, this concept of not suffering the martyrdom of being killed for your faith, but rather, obviously some have had to do this in more heroic ways. But translating that white martyrdom into my daily life, into the things that, I mean, maybe it's a bit childish, maybe it's a bit self-centered to make the experiences of my life so important. But we can think of Mother Teresa, who said it's not that you have to do grand things, but it's that you have to do things with great love. And so we want to look at the lives of the martyrs, not just in this literal sense, but we want to say, how is their life now then showing the glory of Christ? How how is their life now affecting me that I need to respond in the moral way? And in what way is this going to be carried into eternity in my own life? And so that's the importance of looking, that's going to be the importance of looking at the heroic lives of the martyrs. And as we go along, of course, I'm going to have interjections of my life in seminary, of my life in Rome. I like to, sometimes I stumble over my words. Sometimes I, for example, sometimes I go on tangents in my stories, which can be humorous or can be boring, depending on who's listening. But there are so many stories that I can recall. Sometimes I might have forgotten the story for years and it comes back to memory. But one of the things that I've been trying to work on is a sense of gratitude for these stories, for the way that salvation history has played out in my life. And some of them have been the most unsuspecting situations. And usually in those moments, I mean, this is just simply how it works. In those moments where I thought I was doing good, good was then actually so much of a greater good was then done to me. And there's one story which really sticks out to me. And it was when I was in seminary. And this was when I was in seminary for the diocese. And I was studying up in Minnesota. I was at St. John Vianney Seminary in the Twin Cities. And there, the most beautiful thing about this seminary formation is we had an external apostolate every week. And so once a day, it was the same day every week, we would go and we'd have an assignment to where we'd have to go, and for the semester or for the year, depending on the different apostolates, we would be assigned to some sort of charitable work. One year I was working in an orphanage, or like a halfway home for children via Catholic Charities, which was a very, I'm great with kids. I grew up around nieces and nephews and in a home daycare and things like that. So working with the youth is very natural to me. But after that year, I was then assigned to work with people with special needs. And so we would go as a group of three seminarians, and we would go with basically about 30 people, and we'd meet them every month. So that was it was a lighter load of an apostolate, but we would go for a whole day, and then we would have a retreat at one time of the year for three days with them, an overnight retreat, which I have so many stories to tell you from that, which will come up. I'm going to try to give you a story with every podcast just to give you more and slowly unfold who is this Jacob Stein behind Crux Stationalis. But there would be the people with special needs, and then sometimes there'd be their helpers, their friends or their parents or relatives, and they'd come. And there was also a priest chaplain who was one of the seminary priests. We'd meet each month. And I remember from the first encounter I had with them, I like to perform. I like to be, as I said, I did theater. So I like to be, I can turn it on. However, in social settings, I'm very sometimes reserved and stick to the people I know. So if you put me in a group of 100 people, I'm usually one of the last ones to go up and start small chat with someone. But the funny thing is, this first encounter that I had with this apostolate, we began with a mass at the seminary. And I ended up helping a young woman named Misty. She was in a wheelchair, so I ended up being the one. It just so happened this way. I'd push her around, keep her company. And there was lemonade there. I just remember She really liked this lemonade, so she kept on drinking it, kept on making me get more glasses of lemonade for her. She'd smile at me in this coy way just to tell me. She didn't communicate, but I must have made an impression to her because our friendship would carry on for the 2 years of this apostolate. And in the end, like I said, it turns out that this apostolate was more for me than it was for Misty. And there's another story from, it was in February. My birthday was that month. And so every month we would celebrate the birthdays of those who had it in the former month and things like that. And I wasn't eager to go to the meeting because it was either on my birthday or my birthday was that weekend or something. And it was just right before I returned from my semester abroad in Rome. So this is the spring of 2012. It's my last semester as a diocesan seminarian. And I had just traveled home to visit my family to celebrate it was my 21st birthday. And I hadn't seen my family since the summer before because I had studied in Rome. And so I just wasn't eager. But at this meeting, we split up into groups, and Misty was quite disappointed because Misty was not placed in my group. So she kept coming over and she kept knocking my chair with her wheelchair. And it was quite comical because she's a very stubborn and persistent individual. And there was little hope that she would return to her group. But in this same group, there was a woman named Julie, and I hadn't had much experience, spending time with her. Also, because she didn't communicate verbally. She would smile, she would point just sort of indistinctly, and she'd make noises. One of the things I remember is at the end of our meetings, we would go around and we'd share the sort of graces or the joys of the month that we just had and the difficulties. And I was always touched by the way that she responded to all these people in the crowd. Whenever there was a great joy, however, actually, sometimes they were the most minuscule joys that we would ever consider, and there would be so much gratitude by the person sharing, but even more so, Julie would screech in joy. She was so content to hear the happiness of others. And when there was something sad or sorrowful or difficult for her friends, she would likewise just show them, or you'd hear her sadness in her voice and in her expressions of joining and compassionating her friend. Like I said, she didn't communicate verbally, but there were moments where she wanted to express herself even more so. And so she had a keyboard on which she could type. And while typing, the text would appear on the screen, so visible for the other person to see. And then when it finished, she would hit a button and the text would read out in an automated voice. And so, especially in this small group, we split up into small groups, and she used this keyboard. And this day, we were reading the story of the prodigal son from the Gospel of St. Luke. And you know this story, the story of two sons. One asks for his inheritance, goes off and wastes his inheritance, and then thinks he has no more dignity left because he's been scrounging with the pigs in the dirt to eat what they're eating. And he goes to his father, thinking he's no longer worthy to be called his son. He wants to just be a hired servant. And the beauty of this story we hear from St. Luke, the son, he rose up and he came to his father. And when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and was moved with compassion, and running to him, fell upon his neck and kissed him. And We finished the whole story, we read the whole story, and the leader of the group, who was the father of one of the young boys in the group, spoke a bit about the gospel passage and then ended up by asking what the others thought about the passage. And he asked specifically what they thought God might be wanting to tell us. So I was a seminarian, so you're always taught as a seminarian to be the one to speak up, to start speaking, to not make it awkward, not have awkward silences. So I spoke, and then we listened to each other going around the circle. And then it passed to Julie. It was Julie's turn, and so we asked the question again. And I wasn't really expecting anything, to be honest. But Julie began to reach for her keyboard and started to type. And so I said, that was intriguing to me as well, because I knew she only used that keyboard for very important moments. And so it was also always a very slow process, but she was using it for a specific reason. And so it was a sign that she had something important to say or wanted to stress her point. And she began typing, and I was watching the screen, and I began to see I W I L L A L W A. And at this point, I started to, my eyes started watering. Y S L O V E Y O U. And I was extremely humbled and amazed to witness this. It's a summation of the spiritual life, of friendship with Christ. And to see this woman who, first, in so many ways, society rejects, but to see this woman have the wisdom, beyond the wisdom of the wise, beyond the wisdom of the ancients. We ourselves stand before God each day, and we kneel before him each evening, unworthy to be in his presence, and hopefully sorrowful for our sins. And what is his response? I will always love you. And yeah. How often do we forget this? It was my birthday, as I said, so they gave me a cross. It was a mosaic cross with all these red stones put in, and it was made by also people with special needs who are connected to a religious community in France. And so I wrote on the back of that, I will always love you, because I didn't want to forget this story. But this is why we do what we do. This is why you should be doing what you're doing. As I mentioned before, we have so much beating us down every day. We have people in our lives who don't know this simple truth. We wake up some mornings and ourselves don't recognize this truth. We don't begin our day acknowledging this truth. We don't go to sleep having given thanks for this truth, that God always loves you. And this will be the technique of looking at the heroic lives of the martyrs, and to know that it's going to only be in that love that we will truly receive the graces we need for our life and live in that grace. That might mean humbling yourself with your wrong ideas. That might mean changing your life. That might mean radically changing your life. And we can say, if that doesn't happen, none of this will matter. None of the beauty of Rome matters if you're not in the state of grace. The only way it might matter is if it could break through all of those lies and all of those half-truths and convert you. So I have the great privilege of living in the eternal city, but it's a city which in the end, we call it eternal, in the end it will crumble, and it's only oriented to the kingdom of God for my sake to obtain that kingdom, for your sake to arrive there. And that's why we do what we do. So this was the Who is Crux Stationalis? Who is Jacob Stein, your host of Crux Stationalis, with this podcast in conjunction with The Last Lions. I do promise that in the future podcast, there will be a greater structure to the podcast. We'll have more structure because I'll be speaking about the particular lives of the saints. I'll take you to the churches themselves, and we will understand the architectural reality of the churches, the importance of who that saint is, their story, and the fruit that we can draw from it. And we'll be able to do that for 10 episodes, this being the first. And then down the road, I'm sure we'll be able to expand this to even more saints and even more churches. You can find me at www.romanstationchurch.com. That's the landing page for all of my social media of Crux Stationalis. But also, make sure you follow thelastlions.net. That will be your way of staying up to the podcast and all the other authors and podcasters and journalists who will be contributing to The Last Lions. And if you have questions, if you have particular questions, moral questions, if you have questions about history of the church, if you have questions about the liturgy, things like that, there's a question form with the landing page on thelastlions.net. Just look for Jacob Stein, Crux Stationalis, and that form will allow you to communicate directly with me, and I'll be able to answer your questions as the podcast continues on. So thank you for joining. Do pray for The Last Lions, pray for Crux Stationalis, and pray for the church. And like I said, none of it matters if you're not in the state of grace. God bless you, and I will talk to you soon.